I was born in Retobis, New Mexico, and that was a mission not too far from my mother's place, the farmhouse. It was like about 3 miles, so, you know, my mom had most of us girls there with 8 brothers and sisters. So. That's her first marriage, all girls.
That's something to be proud of.
Yeah. And so that's where I was born. And I'm like the second one to the youngest, and I was named, my full name is Lena Ruth Charlie, and my mom made a name of Vicente, and you know, the Vicentes are very well known people around Rehoboth and sometimes around that area. And my dad's last name was Begay, and then when he came back from the Navy, he decided to change his name, or they gave him a name. You know, they were just giving names to people, so mine made a name of Charlie. So it's the way it sounds. It's spelled just the way it sounds. It's a last name for, a first name for a last name. So, but anyways, my mother's name is Grace. It's empty, and I'm Sophie now because she got married a second time. And then my dad, he's still alive. He's like about 89 years old. And he lives in, you know, not too far from Rehoboth. And my mom lives on her own place in near Rehoboth too. So, you know, we all still live in Dallas.
Did you live with your
grandmother? Yeah, my mother, she had 8 girls, and she had just dumped. she split from my dad when he came back from the Navy. I don't know what kind of habits he came back with or whatever, but he was buying cars left and right, and she just said, you know, she couldn't live with, you know, something, you know, a man that went to the Navy and came back a whole totally different person. And then, and so she just said, you know, I can't have my girls living like this. And he was a very good dad, though. He was a very good father, very providing for us. And the, between her and him, that was between her and so she just decided to take all us girls, and she never looked back. She decided she was going to raise all of us. And then my grandmother, my mom was working at the time. She was working 2 jobs, and she didn't know nothing about welfare. She said had she known something, she might have to work 1 job.
Yeah.
So, but she had to make other arrangements so my grandmother, you know, would be taking care of all of us. And so I remember living at my grandma's farm in Rehoboth. She had this big farmhouse that my dad had built for her. And they used it kind of like a church place, you know, like on Sundays. And then people would come to her, and they were kind of like a social service agency thing. And she would weave rugs, and she had like cattle, sheep, horses. She had a chicken pen, which I like to hang around. Yeah. And, you know, I'd go check on the rabbits, and my sister right above me and my little sister and I, we'd all hang out together all the time. We'd go down to the dam, which was like about maybe 3/4 of a mile. We'd walk down there and watch the ducks and go off that dam. And then we'd go down to the... she had this huge cornfield, and she'd grow like melons and squash and chili, potatoes, and just all kinds of stuff down there. And I remember walking down there right before the men come home in the CD from the bill, we'd go down there and pick dinner. So that was, that I remember that. And then I remember a lot of people like coming to see my mom, my grandmother, and you know, they asked her, you know, if my my grandfather, who was a reverend or a pastor, and he helped people like write papers or help fill papers out, or if they didn't know certain things, he'd help them out.
What kind of church?
I think it was a Baptist church, yeah, because I remember after he passed away, my grandmother would take us into Dallas, and we'd go to this Baptist church, and we'd sit in the back and play back there, and my grandmother would be, you know, sitting in the church. But she was traditional, but then she also went to church too, so, and I remember playing in this big curfew, because there's like this big, like, sort of like a river like that went between the cornfield and the farmhouse, and it went into the dam and then, you know, down the road, and we'd go down there, and we just, like, dig holes and just play down there all day long. You know, my grandmother wasn't working enough for us to be girls to have toys or anything like that. So we just, like, you know, play with whatever was around there, hang around on the trees, climb the trees, and there was a tractor there, we'd get on it and, you know, play on that, and we'd hunt for shells, and, you know, we'd take stuff back with my grandmother, and when my mom was coming back from work, we'd have tulips for her, and different colors of flowers, or we just find odd-looking rocks and, you know, bring them home, and, you know, that was what we did. And then my grandmother would cook for us in the evening, and then, like, right before the sun went down, she'd put our little, like, sheepskin down, and we'd lay down and go to sleep and get up early in the morning and, you know, help her do her chores, feed the chickens and the horses, and just do everything. And then she started getting sick, so she went to the hospital, and I was raised there, like, maybe the 4 years of my life, and then she was in the hospital, and then my mom took over probably 1 year, and then we got sent to the boys' school for 2 years, and then came back to public school.
Where were your older sisters?
Oh, my older sisters, two were in Fort Wingate. I had a boarding school there. And then two more were in a border town boarding school in Dallas. And my grandmother, I remember, she was totally against all this. She didn't want us home to school. She wanted us to stay home. And she didn't, you know, she didn't want us to have nothing to do with school.
Was it because you were new to the physical way, or because so far away from the
She
was supposed to be a kid also back to church.
I think she went to the Baptist church because a lot of Indians were going then and either getting converted or I don't know what really the deal was, but I think she got comfortable, like, getting out of the house sometimes and away from the farm, which was so far away, you know, from everything. And that was kind of like a gathering place also besides the farmhouse that we were raised at. So we'd go there, and everybody would, like, socialize on, you know, what was coming up or, you know, what things were changing and, you know, kind of like a news place on where to get stuff or how, you know, the tribe was going to do a certain thing or, you know, things like that. So it was, she went to church, but then I think they also socialized a lot on what was going on, you know, around them and how their lives were changing and stuff like that. But I remember we were really, really attached to my grandmother, and she was really, really attached to us, all the girls, and when she started getting sick, I know she got really, really bad, because you know, she's like getting out of her control, and she really told my mom and made it very clear that she didn't want her to go to school, that she wanted her mom to stay home. In fact, when the bus used to, when two of my sisters used to walk down to the bus, she'd be in a really bad mood in the morning, and she'd be kind of, you know, I don't know why, you know, the girls have to go to school and, you know, stuff like that. And
could you think about a question to go to school?
Yeah, I think that was really the real reason why she did that, and I think she totally regrets it to this day, and that there's no way she can undo things, but then she met my stepdad around that time, and he's a very compassionate man. He took an 8 girls and, you know, like his own. And plus he had his own family, which I think there's 7 in their family. But they were mostly like all involved growing up and
everything.
Yeah, he's an alcoholic, yeah. And then he took his 8 girls and I was very young when my mom met him, and he raised me since I was just young. And I think I was 2 when my mom met him, and my little sister was still just like a newborn, you know. So, you know, her and I were really, really close to him. She more than I, but because I was my dad's favorite. So it's like, this is my dad, but this one is also my dad, you know. And so, my dad still to this day, he's like, that's my daughter, you know, and then my stepdad, I'm like, but he raised me, and that's my dad, and, you know, I kind of think they were both hurt in that way, you know, like, I really respect my dad that he still kept in contact with us, but to this day, he still invited to all those family gatherings, and he still, like, talks to all of us, and, you know, we still all respect each other.
When you went to the boarding school, did you show you the room with your sister?
No, they totally separated it all. They put my sister right above me in a different building, and they put me in a different area, which was in the same building but far from where my little sister was. And my little sister, man, she was a fighter. I mean, she'd fight the matrons and scratch them. And she put up a fight.
Did you speak English before you went to the boarding school?
No. I spoke nothing but math. Yeah. Because, see, my we didn't know nothing about English. In fact, we'd go to the Baptist church, and people would talk to us in English, and we'd be like, what do they saying? You know, we don't know what they're saying.
Yeah, so did your grandmother speak English?
Her English was broken, yeah. But she talked to us in Yavapai, and we could fly in Yavapai. And then our relatives would all talk to us in Yavapai, and we, you know, we learned from Yavapai.
Did you pick up the language
when you went to the boarding school? Yeah, we did. But then it was broken. Very broken.
Do
we
have to speak
Latin? No, we did not. I like to speak Latin at all. In fact, if we spoke Navajo and they heard us, they would kind of put us in a corner and they just, you know, get on our knees and hold our arms up for us. It was a long, long time being torture, you know. Or they'd make us get on the rug in the house of living room. This is a huge area, you know, between all the 4 rooms in one dorm building, and pick up every little piece of, you know, whatever. Or go to the, give us a toothbrush and go to the shower stalls, or, they come up with some stuff, you know. They do something.
Did you live with other Navajos, or did you live with them?
No, they were all Navajos.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were all Navajos, and but the matrons were all from Oklahoma. And so, yeah, they were Oklahoma, which I really don't know that, you know. But I know they were pretty strict. And I think, you know, they maybe for them, like, maybe if they had Navajo matrons, they'd help Navajo girls. They, you know, they would do that. You know, like, in the Navajo tribe, it's like everybody is related, even if it's not by blood. We call older people a mother and father out of respect. And like Nado and Travis would be, and Willie realized would be my brothers and sisters. And that's how we, you know, and I think like if a Navajo matron was there, she, you know, respect us in that way and talk to us like we were her children, and eventually break the rules and talk Navajo to us. But that was, you know, one of the big things. And these ladies did their job very well. They were very, you know, orderly, and they went by the book. They didn't know no Navajo, so, you know, obviously they had to talk to us in English, and we had to respond in English.
And they were at Oklahoma here?
Oklahoma.
I always thought that the teachers were white.
Yeah, the teachers were white, and I remember Mrs. Ann, I think she might have been maybe, I think she's a black lady. She might have been black, mixed with something else, but maybe white, maybe Indian. But she was my favorite teacher. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I remember they were all white.
Were they female
Indian? Mostly female. Yeah.
What about
Yeah, we start up in the morning. We get up like about maybe 5 in the morning, make our bed. We go and like shower, we like brush our teeth and just get ready, and I'll be ready down in line to march to breakfast. And we stand in line forever, and when we stand in line, they get the thing like Christian song. And then we go to breakfast, and they feed us breakfast, and I didn't like the food. I remember I hated food. I had a hard time getting used to the food, because, you know, from eating corn and vegetables and lamb and all that stuff, and then you go to peas and spinach and eggs and stuff, and I'm like, I don't like this. Yeah, I said, I don't like this, you know. And in fact, I think Australia lost a lot of weight. Then they started forcing us to, like, eat. You know, they'd make us sit there and eat and eat and eat. If we didn't finish our food, they'd punish us. But, you know, like, I'm not eating this stuff, you know. I think a lot of them were there, like maybe, you know, that was my first year that, you know, I was doing that. I didn't eat, you know, it was all quarantine, and I just didn't want to eat. My little sister didn't want to eat, my older sister, she's like, I don't like the food. But I think a lot of them were there, like, maybe 2 years or longer than us, so they accepted the food. But you could probably tell the new ones that, you know, just came in from, like, farms or reservations, and everything was totally new to them, and a lot of them got sick. Not just homesick, but just very, very sick. In fact, that second year I was there, I got really, really sick. The doctors didn't know what was wrong with me. I was sitting up hot blood, and they put me in isolation. Eventually, I was in the hospital for 3 weeks. They didn't get a hold of my mom, and when she found out, she got sick. And that's when we got back. So that was the last straw. because, you know, I had gotten so sick, they never contacted her. And to this day, they don't really know what it was. Because I was probably sick from in bed. So that was the last straw. So we were all happy, and then my mom had another little girl. So we were like, good, we have a little sister, we can stay home with her and play with her and everything. Then my mom sent us to the public school, and then she sent my older sister right above me. She sent her to the border town with my two other sisters, so she got along just well there. And because she had my two older sisters, her and show her what to do when you know. But I was the first one to go to like a public school. And then I'm like, why am I always the first? No, my mom at that by that time my grandmother had passed away. And then she moved like closer to where one of her jobs were. And she was just like walked to where it wasn't even very far, like from here to the fourth place. And then the bus would come, and I was like, I didn't even know what they were talking about, you know, in English. I was like, duh, what are they saying, you know? And so you could tell how much English I picked up in the boarding school, not even very much. I mean, the very ironic thing about everything was they didn't want us to talk Navajo, our own languages, but then they didn't teach us the correct way to talk English or how to speak English correctly. So, you know, when I got out of boarding school and went into the public school, I was sitting there like, duh, what is everybody talking about, you know?
What did you do when you were at boarding school?
Not really nothing. I mean, all we do is we paint and we go play outside, and I don't think these teachers really did a job, you know, their job. They were just probably people I gathered from the East that were looking for positions, you know, just right out of school. And they were all very young Muslim women, now that I remember. And they come out here, and I'm pretty sure the living conditions weren't all that great for them either, because I think the next year I had this one teacher that was really nice, you know, besides Mrs. Ann, and she never came back the next year, so I was like, okay, we just got sick or something happened, you know. But, you know, what the, you know, how to, we learned how to do it, like our ABCs and numbers and stuff like that, but, like, getting into, like, the structure of the English language and stuff. The only thing they really pinned on us and were very adamant about was for us not to speak Navajo at all, not to communicate or anything at all.
So did you really not have any way to communicate
on the internet? Oh, yes. When there's no matrons around or no teachers around, you be on the playground talking Navajo, or, you know, in the lunchroom, they'd watch us, so, you know, you have to be careful. It's like how you see like a prison, you know, how guards are standing.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah. Military.
Yeah. It's actually like a prison camp. Like I was telling Anna, it's like a federal prison. You know what I see now, you know, in movies. If that's actually what it was, we were marched here and there. I mean, if we were marched here and there, we have to look right straight. If somebody caught us doing this or even moving, I mean, we just be punished. It's any way they think of punishing us. And we'd be marched here and there. It's like in a military school or an army camp or whatever you want to call it.
I think it would be hard for the so-called the Masons, if they were, you know, Indians as well, to come to treat or try to anglicize. Young Indians, you know, when do you think they could just get corrupted, or they were just trying to find jobs and find their way to get along?
I think they had a whole different idea them, like the white teachers there. They were, and these ladies were very young also. So a lot of them were like Cherokees and Choctaws. I remember that because, you know, when they moved the Cherokees and the Choctaws east of the, I mean west of the Mississippi River, and they had this, they had, I mean, their literacy, I mean, their rate of English language and numbers and all that was so great, even greater than, you know, the people that were putting it on them. They had the money to go to school, and they were, like, you know, they were very progressive in anglicizing the whole tribe and progressing at a fast rate. And they were just, like, really grasping at a lot of things. So the government said, oh, these people are perfect. You know, they're like white people. Indian people, and let's just send them there. It might have been money, just giving them a lower pay rate, you know. And they know English, the English language very well, and they know how to write. They know how to write out reports. They know their numbers and stuff like that. Whereas the Southwest Indians really didn't know that much, you know, but manual labor, you know. So they sent the people they removed from their reservations that, like the Choctaws and Cherokees, they moved them to Oklahoma, and they so they took these Indians to go to the different schools to, you know, be matrons and try to, you know, discipline stuff in the way that the federal government wanted to, you know, to be tribe us or, you know, not. You know, if you take a child away from their tribe, eventually they're going to, this is what they want to do, is to break up our culture. But my mom thought after the second year, after I got really sick and how the matrons were treating us, and we cried. And, I mean, my two sisters would always cry when we'd go back, you know. And I was always the one that kept my feelings inside. I was really strong and trying to be strong for my mom. And I guess I was trying to make her proud of myself. But it's like great big hole in my heart, you know. And it was just like, that was just like I was lifeless. I didn't have spirit or anything. They broke my spirit, you know. And then my mom, she left the last time, and I just bawled. I ran up to the car. I don't want to be here anymore, and I ran up to the car. And I think when she saw that, you know, me running up to the car and me getting real sick, because, you know, I was always a brave one, and, you know, always do as I was told and everything. And she saw that, and it was really broke her heart, and she said,
you guys can thank me.
So, but anyways, I would never, ever send, I mean, I would have, even a public school. I mean, that's why, like, I don't have kids right now, because I'm thinking, and it's a cop-out on my part, too, because I'm thinking, the things I went through in my life, I don't think I want my kids to go through something like that. Because even like Bubba, if somebody picks on Bubba, oh, I'm there. Because probably of what I've gone through, you know, or test, you know, I'm like, the kids blind things in the yard and doing it, you know. I go out there and I'm like, he's not going to like that. She doesn't understand, you know. I'm sorry. Because, and then I was like, well, you know, if I had a kid, people would have to understand probably what I've gone through, you know, as a child. Being physically abused and sexually abused in a boarding school where I don't have any power or anything like that. So,
yeah.
I think I miss my grandmother a lot. You know, she wasn't there.
When your grandmother died, did you have four sisters?
Yeah.
That's pretty really good.
Yeah, we got to go back, and I really didn't understand that whole part about death and all that, because that was probably my first experience with death, and I just saw her in the casket, and I was like, you know, about this, you know, and then I started asking, you know, my mom, said, my grandma came back, and she started crying. All this stuff, and then she just, you know, she just say something else, and like another, she wouldn't make up stories, but she would say, you know, she's in heaven, and she's trying to explain to us something, and then one time my sisters, they were like in high school, I think, the ones that were at the border town, and I was like probably in the fifth or sixth grade. And they came home, and I don't know if they were playing with my mom or what, but they had gone to the farmhouse, and then they came home that evening, and they said that they had seen my grandmother, and my mom just put a stop to it, and then she sent them to their room, and she told. And then me and my little sister said, Grandma's back, you know, Grandma's home. And we were like probably fourth and sixth graders. Still didn't get this concept of death, you know. And so, you know, my mom was just like, you know, she was hurt, she was confused, and she didn't know how to explain anything. She was very apologetic to us, and we were just like, when is she going to come back? Really start telling us the truth about everything, you know, about how, you know, what life is like and where people go and stuff like that.
Did your older sisters talk to you about what they see in the process?
Not to this day they never did. I think my mom really probably got after them where they didn't want to ever say anything about it again. But then they were really, really hurt. And my mom saw the whole family really, really hurt, all the girls, because we were just like all really, really close. And she saw this, and she didn't know what to do, and she saw how close we were, and, you know, that nothing could ever replace her, obviously. Then my older sister, she kind of took responsibility and told us, you know, how things were, how, you know, that she was going to come back, but we see her when we see her again. Then my mother didn't have the heart to tell us. So it's not okay with that.
When you were the new 15-year-old, what about you had to go back to the
school? They told me not to tell my mom. They would just. They weren't nailed. They were doing that. And I have a feeling, well, obviously they learned it, you know. So somebody has to have done it to them, and somebody has to have done it to them, and then, and then, and then. And I have a feeling that it was the people, the federal government, that set up this thing. And the people that were coming to me, because in our tribe, that's not a way of life. You know, to abuse kids and to molest kids and stuff like that. That's not heard of in our tribe. Even though it happens now, you know, so I think maybe that was another way to destroy our mind and our spirit.
When you were in public school for 4 years,
yeah,
before you went back to Boston, was it hard to use? How long did it take you to do that?
Oh, okay. I was in boarding school for 2 years, and then from there I just kept going to public school. I never went back to boarding school. No, never, ever. My mom totally against it. And how did I pick up English? I didn't pick up English until I was about probably in the 5th and 6th grade. Yeah. And I hated going to school because people just kids would make fun of me.
Were the kids, were there other Navajo kids there? Or
there was just one other Navajo girl. Okay. It was her and I, and that was it. The rest were all Anglo, and maybe Mexican, but then they were looked upon as like white people because of the way they put themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but anyways, I didn't really grasp anything. You know, the English language, or to converse, or write, or speak it, and how, like, probably in the 6th grade. And then from there, I took off. I read every book I could read, and I'm still like that. When I have my person, I have at least 2 or 3 books in my person. And I love the library. That's my favorite hangout. And I'll tell my mom, you know, that story that Georgiana tells about the belly button blues.
Yeah.
The Navajos, you bury your belly button where you want your child to, you know, to grow in, you know, like maybe in books, or if you want them to be a good cook, maybe in the kitchen or something. And I was telling my mom, I go, where did you bury my belly button? She goes, I'm not telling. And I said, I think it was in the library. I said, because I love books. I will, you know, even like before you came, I was going through all these old newspapers that I hadn't seen and haven't read, you know, so I was like going through them. So, you know, I love books.
Were your younger sisters
in
the public school
as well? Yeah, my younger sister was. And then the one right above me, she went to high school. I think she, I don't know if she liked, I can't really speak for her and say she liked the boarding school, but I think she was more comfortable with being here. And not that I wasn't, or not that my little sister is not, but I think she just kind of got used to, like, hanging with the Indian kids and wanted to stay with, like, my sisters, and now to go to this day, they're like this. One right above me and the two right above her. So they all hang out together, and, you know, they've always been like that throughout their lives. But she went to school, to a public school, I think maybe 1 year after she went to high school. But then when she went to a boarding school, she excelled. She was like in America's Americanized students with PhD and honors. And she's been in another, I think 2 other books of honor students, and then another one, I don't know what it was, but she just really took off in high school.
Did they have the same problems?
You know what? I don't really know. I don't really know, but my little sister and I have just started really, really, we have always been really close. In fact, people think we're twins. Because we'll be talking, and she finishes the sentences, and I do that too, or we know what we're thinking, but we're not twins, identical, or... Oh, what do you call the other one? Yeah, we're not at all. And people think we're twins. They always say, oh, there's the twins. So people just call us the twins now in the family. But what was the question?
She's thinking of you.
Oh, her and I have just been really talking recently, and she remembers some kind of abuse, but she can't really pinpoint who it was or anything. But I was a little older, and I can probably pinpoint. In fact, I want to investigate it and see, you know, had been abused. I'm pretty sure probably most of the girls there were probably being abused and bullied, and since all of us were being punished, you know, we were all, there was no favorites or anything like that. So even if you did your best in whatever they told you to do, it was never appreciated, which is the least I ever expected from anybody. But it was just like it wasn't done right, or it wasn't the way I told you to do it, or it was never right. So on top of that, they'd always find something. They'd find something to make you lose who you were, lose your identity.
Was it all girls?
Yeah, it was boys and girls, but boys have their own boys, and the women have, and the girls have their own boys.
How was religion?
I think we went on Sundays and in the morning and at night, and then maybe on Wednesdays or Tuesdays, I can't remember which one it was, at night. So they would divide us in what we said we were, Catholic, Baptist. And I just remember Baptist, so, I mean, they asked me, they go, what are you? And I go, Baptist, I guess, you know. So they were like, okay, you go over here, and, you know, and so, and I was like, I'm an Indian, and that's what I am, but you know what I mean, they would say, they choose something for you anyway, so I would just say, Baptist, you know, whatever. So they'd send us there, and then they'd tell us stories about Jesus and God, and you know what, and I really grasped those stories, because it was very comforting. They were very good stories, and the way we were being punished, and you know, the way I was being abused and everything, and how they threatened to, you know, my life, and how they made it hell upon hell. Those are some of my favorite times. My face feels like, oh, okay, I get to go hear their stories, and, you know, stuff.
Were they nice to see when you were in?
Yeah.
It was like the church or wherever you would go.
They would sort of like threaten us in a nice way. If you sin, and then you're going to hell, stuff like that. Or if you don't, so if you don't do what the matrons tell you to do, you're going to go to hell. Stuff like that. So, but the stories were very comforting. And I liked the story. And we got to color and, you know, stuff like that. And the man that used to come and see us, I remember it was a man. I don't remember him as being mean or nice, just like doing his job. Well, I tried it. I was faithful in a church. My mom has been Christian like for 15 years now, and she tried to like do the eating way, but so many things have changed. As for my mom, my grandmother was raised, and her grandmother was raised, and like the medicine people in our families, they were like, they started passing away, the medicine gatherers, they started passing away, and so we were losing things, and then at the same time we were being forced to go to school and not learn these ways where they were no longer, well, like our doctors were, you know, dying and whatever, and so I could kick myself because one of my grandmothers, she was an herb gatherer, and my maternal grandmother was a midwife, and my uncle, he was like a veterinarian, but he was a veterinarian, you know, for the animals, for the cows, and he'd know the different plants and the different ways of how to, you know, neuter or fix them or whatever, you know. And so all these ways of our people were, like, you know, being put to an end. And it was out of our control because, you know, my mom kind of, like, moved into the city, and she started working and taking care of us. That was her main concentration. And then putting us in school and for us to be getting education is very important. And now I see it. I never really, just when I was young, I remember my grandmother, like I said, she'd be to a farmhouse and then she'd go to that. But I think that was all mostly like for, you know, social gatherings and speaking and then my